Well, we're very lucky to be joined on the line by Vinnie McCabe, and he's the director of Cloud Spotter, which is a lovely piece of theatre which is running at the moment on the Classic Theatre in Clontarf. Hello, Vinnie, you're very welcome to the show.
Cheers. Thanks, Rebecca.
Am I saying the name of that theatre right?
Yes, the Classic, yeah.
Classic, yeah.
it's not Classic, it's Classic.
Classic, so the Irish.
It's an Irish word. They have a what we used to call a shavu in Old Irish, then it became a bulta in kind of newer Old Irish, and now it changed to a H, so Classic, but it's a kind of it's just a sound at the end of the C, Classic, you know. But it means basically a gathering, you know, a kind of a bringing together of people, and it's very much a social centre. It's an interesting place, you know. I mean, I live quite nearby. you know, I've passed it many times. And
yeah, so have I. I don't think I've actually been in there, but I'm going to come and see your show, so I will see it soon.
Yeah, they have like it's very, very big inside. It's very interesting. The range of sort of spaces that they have available. And they do, essentially now it is a kind of a culture kind of base. You know, I think originally it was funding was raised through the Kyoto's Clontarf group.
Okay.
Now we're not connected with that at all. We're very much kind of just a contemporary theatre company, but I would have an interest in traditional Irish culture, of course. But it's a fabulous place. I think it's a place, to tell the truth, that it will and could and should be used an awful lot more. I know that several bigger theatres come to the gate, and that play Blackwater. Well, what's your
the Donal Shields
play there recently. So there are companies using it to rehearse, all right.
Well, that's great.
But I think as a performance space, it's terrific. It holds over 300 people.
Wow, and what are the acoustics like in there?
Perfect. The visuals are kind of slightly odd insofar as apparently, I was talking to Jim McAllister, who's the man who runs the place, the other day, and Jim was saying that there was an original kind of architectural design for the theatre space itself, which was that basically the cross arch, old kind of, you know, straightforward theatre kind of stage setup, and then there were to be two banks of seats, slightly to the left and slightly to the right at the back of the theatre facing the stage, but apparently only one of them got built. So there's a slightly odd kind of angle to the bank seating, but you know, the ground floor, the next level, and the next level to small, shortest enough levels. You know, chairs are put out there, very good seats, terrific quality seats, and with the result that it really doesn't detract at all from the experience of watching anything on the stage. But the acoustics. The acoustics, apparently a German company came in when they were building, and they spent a long time checking out every single inch of the performance space.
Wow.
For acoustics. They had, at the time, I mean, we're talking, I suppose, about 10, 12 years ago, but at the time they had quite sophisticated equipment for checking out the acoustics in terms of echoes and noise and reverberation and whatever goes into that sort of science of acoustics. But the sound is absolutely immaculate. I mean, any band, particularly musically wise, it's great from the point of view of performance. Now the actors is terrific, but I think it's designed really for music more than anything, and they have a great sound desk and lighting desk. And we've found now that the sound, because we use Sonny Knowles' music as a kind of a linking
theme,
in the show, because Nan, the central character, who is in the early stages of dementia, she has a love for Sonny Knowles, but it's kind of her association and connection with him is becoming much more dependent almost as her condition progressive, for want of a better word, you know. But so we play through our system, we play that music, and the sound quality is absolutely superb, you know. I think it's a place that more and more people really do need to check out. They have a range of different social and cultural and arts activities there. It's not fully developed, it can be developed more, but definitely it's a place that if there's anything on, if anyone wants to get a chance to kind of see it, see the place itself, well worthwhile investigating, you know.
And what's very interesting about the shows this week and next week is you're having them at 11 a.m. in the morning, which I think is a wonderful idea.
Well, we've done it now on at different times, you know, and different audiences. We've had a great reaction across the board. It's a beautiful human story, beautifully written by Michael Harnett, very naturalistic and very realistic, and has a shape and a form and a heart to it that people connect in with. There's fun, there's good laughs, there's the music, as I say, and then there's a sad thing. So we get cheers and laughter and standing ovations, you know, for the performances, because the actors are superb. But the reason we have it at that time is we were exploring, when we did it first in the Sean O'Casey Theatre in East Wall back last April into May, we wanted to bring together older people who would be more kind of engaged with the issue of aging, number one,
uh-huh.
and then in turn, and then either dementia or Alzheimer's, and but also to kind of bring together, transition your students and the older audiences together to experience the play in relation to each other together. But then we've had this 15-20 minute sort of Q&A type thing after it, just to look at some of the issues, so that it doesn't just end with the play ending from the point of view of it being you know, a piece of drama around a story and entertainment, etc., but that it also is a platform to stimulate thinking around what is a growing and expanding issue, which is aging as such, because of the population.
Mm-hmm.
All of the aspects and factors around that, but also particularly to do with the new reality that in many families, grandparents are increasingly having to shoulder the responsibility of rearing their grandchildren.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Where the parents are around, their conjunction, you know, they kind of support the process, and sometimes at their own cost, but in a situation like that, at least there's a balance there. The children of the family do have their natural parents. They have the, we'll say, the kind of paternal and maternal factors that would, I suppose, bring in a culture of a degree of you know, of principle around mm-hmm. values, around behavior, around kind of purpose, around you know, focus and in terms of direction, etc. And but if the parents, the natural parents, are removed from the situation, and you have a grandchildren being reared purely by the grandparents, you have a different dynamic. You have a deeper bond in many ways, because there isn't the sort of controlling factor that natural parents exercise in their relationship with their children.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Yeah.
Yeah, but when they're not there, the natural inclination of grandparents, because they're older, they're wiser, they've gone through the process of rearing their own children, naturally, but they also don't have the same type of directional control exercise over their grandchildren. Now that gets even more sort of that becomes can lead to a kind of a crisis energy around the relationship in certain respects, because if they're teenagers, you have the, you know, you have the hormonal reality of teenage life.
Tell me about Vinny. I have three teenagers at the moment, and two in their 20s. But God, the teenagers.
Right. So you can, but also, you know, if the parents aren't there, although the grandparents may be benign and supportive and loving, and in fact they are very nurturing, uh-huh, and they support the best in the grandchildren, but they also don't have that sort of, they don't exercise the same kind of control children, which the parents will, out of their natural responsibility, do. So when you have that situation, and say there's somebody in a marginalised community, or a community that's that's deprived to some degree or another, and that can be any community really, in many ways across the board, but where you have that situation, then the children, the teenagers, will look for to replace the elements missing in the natural family, and usually, mm-hmm, it's through a street family, you know, it's through a club family, an identification of a group of one kind or another. And that can be good and it can be bad, you know. So if somebody then kind of is connected in on a street level with a street family, and they're involved in crime, then inevitably there's going to be, it leads to trouble. So in our play, The Cloud Spotted, the Thomas, who is...
This is Callum Maxwell, graduated.
He's an amazing actor, absolutely extraordinary young actor. And I think, I'm not just saying that because he's in the show, mm-hmm, that I'm directing or anything, but many, many people have come up again and again and just said, well, that he's an actor to watch out for, you know. But Callum plays Thomas. Now, when the play is set, he's 16 years of age. When he was brought before the court for a minor misdemeanor, where himself and a few lads broke into a place, an old warehouse, and the police came in and they were brought before the judge, and he was threatened with sort of some kind of punitive sort of penal sort of response. But the grandmother, Nan, she stepped in and made an appeal to the judge. So she was left by ward of court to rear him and look after him and make, uh-huh, sure he went to school. And he got a one last chance, I think. So the play begins around that, where the judge is asking her, can she look after him on her own? Is she capable of minding him at her age and stuff like that? And she says, look, I'll do my best. I'll really do my very best. He's a good lad. He's not a bad lad. I'm going to look out for him. So that's where the play kicks off. And then Nan then is in a state of high anxiety a lot of the time because of the responsibility that she now has. And she's elderly, and she's in her early 70s, right? She loves him, she's a strong woman, amazing character, and Deirdre Monaghan plays Nan superbly. That's all. There's no other words that can be described.
Fantastic. And there's another female actress as well, isn't there? Brenda?
Yes, Brenda Brooks plays Annie. Now, Annie is Nan's daughter, and Thomas's aunt,
uh-huh,
and she's her and her brothers and her sister, they really don't like Thomas being there. They think he's a bad influence, etc. But none of them have offered to look after him and look out for him. And so she kind of represents the alienated attitude of the rest of the family towards Thomas. And because Nan is very protective of Thomas, they're alienated from her as well. So there's an interesting kind of subterfuge going on between Nan and Thomas in relation to the rest of the family.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Sounds great.
That's a really interesting kind of dimension to the drama. It is a drama. There's a dramatic core running through the thing, and it revolves around the tension which Nan is experiencing through the anxiety she has for making sure that Thomas sticks, you know, stays on the right side of the path, as it were, and to look out so that he doesn't fall off again and get involved with with either drugs or gangs or anything like that. So there's a really interesting, very kind of vibrant sort of stress within the drama, dramatic texture of the piece. And then there's the personalities of the three characters, in fact. Mm-hmm. And Nan loves her music. She loves Sonny. She's very witty. She's humorous, and they get on very, very well. Thomas, the audience suspects that Thomas is up to no good because of certain things that he repeatedly does throughout the play, which I won't say what.
Vinny, it sounds like you're really enjoying directing it, because it's an honor to speak to you, because you've worked on so many things.
Vinny, I'm just looking at your repertoire here. I actually worked in Fair City when you played Seamus McAleer back in 2005. I played Trevor.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in so many things. Trumpet City, obviously the Game of Thrones. I mean, countless stuff. I mean,
when I was out in Fair City, I was talking to Brian Murray once.
Yeah,
we both were, because I trained in the Abbey School of Acting with Brian.
Of course,
back in the late 60s.
Wow,
the early 70s, and at that time, which I won't sidetrack by going into too much, but I think it's worth noting that at the time, myself and Jim Sheridan, we went to school together, and then we formed Slot Players down in several places.
Wow.
And then from there, we built the Project Arts Centre, etc. You could walk into the Abbey School of Acting off the street, which is what we did. They used to have it on 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock on a Tuesday and a Thursday. And when we left school, we were 17, 18 years of age. When we left school, he worked in the bank on the bottom of Dame Street, the Bank of Ireland, in the bottom of Dame Street. And I worked in an insurance company for a couple of years before we left. And then we started working on building the project, but we also then went to university and did the degrees in English and drama and history and stuff like that together, you know.
But isn't it great that you've managed...
You could walk into the Abbey, you know. You could walk in to get training there. We raised some eyebrows, I can tell you, because we didn't have the same sort of, I suppose, what we would regard as negative reverence for an institution which we saw as kind of quite aged and not really in touch with contemporary Dublin as it was emerging at that time, you know.
Well, looking back at Fair City, I'm not too sure. Didn't kill you off, did they?
No.
Would you go back to it?
that's a funny question. You know, at the moment, Tony Tormey is bringing Fair City, bringing RTE to court.
I know, yes. I've seen that. I was shocked to see that because, I mean, the original actor in it.
Yeah, but the reason now I'm bringing that up because it's an answer to your question. The fixed-term contract legislation, as far as I know, it certainly was back a few years ago, is that if you have four annual contracts, 1 year after the other, it doesn't matter how long within the year you've worked, but if you have four consecutive annual contracts given to you, and that could be for 10 weeks, 20 weeks, whatever, you're entitled after 4 years to either get a redundancy package if you have to finish, or to be made a permanent member of staff. And that's what Tony is actually challenging RTE on. And he's absolutely right.
Well, you were in it longer than me. I was in it from 2005. I was in it for 2 years because when Killian O'Sullivan Lorcan got killed, he got shot. I worked quite a lot with Liam O'Whelan's brother, Fiacre, I think his name's Fiacre. And Killian got shot dead while Lorcan, we were all written out. And of course, Bridget de Courcy took over. And Niall Matthews was gone. Niall Matthews was brilliant to work for. He was great.
He was
amazing. Yeah. And it was like love hate back when we were in it at the time. Than what it was when it turned out to be what it did turn out to be. It just kind of went more family orientated. But will, without discussing the case too much, but will he be let go now from Fair City, or what's going to happen? Will it be awkward for him to work in it?
I would think that RTE, because of its conservative basic kind of sort of position, I would imagine that that Tony, they couldn't get rid of him. I mean, he has a right to bring this case. if they were to let Tony go at this point, it would seem to be a prejudice around the fact that he's challenging the structure of their contract, you know. And if that was the case, then I think he'd have a very good case.
And he's not the only actor. I believe there's two more that haven't been revealed. Names haven't been revealed, are doing exactly the same thing.
Right. Well, yeah, it's yeah, there's some interesting stuff I could tell you about that from my own
experiences.
I it wouldn't be right.
Would you watch Fair City still now, or would you have you moved on?
Yeah, I'm not, because I know the actors there, and every so often I'll have a look in and just sort of, you know, to just see watch them and doing the biz. And I know, because I enjoy watching my colleagues, you know, doing what they do. A lot of the newer actors I don't know these days, to tell the truth, because you know, there's so many people coming on the scene, and I think the standard of acting generally is very, very good.
But the reason why I asked you, I'm sorry for cutting over there, because a lot of the top soaps in the UK, especially Emmerdale and Coronation Street, have brought back veteran actors from back in when it was absolutely massive in the ratings. I'm not saying Fair City is not massive in the ratings now, but if the option was there for you to come back, would you do it?
Oh, it would if it was bringing back McAleer. Yeah,
yeah.
Why not? Now,
he was a rogue, wasn't he, old McAleer?
you started off, Robbie, by asking me, you know, was I that you dropped or killed off? I wasn't. What happened was that I returned to the scene. I was out there for about 6 years, and I returned in revenge for. I can't remember the character's name, but the girlfriend that I had in the play, in the series, one of them.
Was it Rebecca? Was it this lawyer? Was it?
Yes. That's right. And
Rebecca Smith.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, Annette.
Annette. Yeah. Annette was kind of treated pretty badly, so I came back to revenge Annette. And with the threat to burn down McCoy's.
That's right. Yeah, she died. Yeah.
And in the event, I got badly burned, I had this black glove.
It's all coming back now.
It was weird. It was very strange. Anyway, the thing is that I didn't go through with it, and I decided then to leave and go off to do some building work or something in South America. So, as far as the character is concerned, he's out there somewhere in a warmer climate, a building from probably up to all kinds of Codubbury.
Well, that's.
So, I mean, I think it'd be humorous for him to come back.
Oh,
you know?
I think so. Well, if anybody is listening out there now, producers and directors of RTE now, we've just put in the peel out for Vinnie McCabe to come back as Seamus McAleer. He's off down to South America, and it will be brilliant to get him back the way he used to be, even worse. And kill off a few of the actors that we're kind of browned off looking at instead. Come here, my door's open as well, because I wasn't killed off either, but I mean, I was absolutely brutal, so I don't think they're going to have me back.
No, you were great, Robbie. I've had a couple of lines on it, but I haven't had a proper character. Vinny, are you enjoying directing compared to acting, or are you enjoying
well,
that?
I am, actually, because I think there's different types of direction, you know, there's different types of... Some directors are kind of, would be more technical into a more kind of, you know, a lighting, and maybe say directors who direct musicals and stuff like that, where you have a range of different types of action to deal with. But with this, because it's so naturalistic and dialogue-based and character-based, my experience as an actor really kind of came through to the fore.
I can imagine.
I found that, I just found that in that with experience, that I was really good at. I don't mean to blow my own trumpet or anything like that, but I found that I was good at communicating the essence of what was needed for particular scenes, you know, within the dialogue.
Because you're an actor.
Of that. And I had a particular approach to acting, so I can kind of bring that to bear. But Callum actually said it to me one day. He said what he really liked about me directing is that, not unlike other actors who direct, I wasn't demonstrating. I never once got up on the stage and in any way ever made an effort to kind of demonstrate what he should do. or what any of the actors should do. I just kind of responded and engaged with the process that they were engaged in, you know. And I think that definitely is down to my experience as an actor, you know, in having worked with so many good directors throughout my life, but also knowing the pitfalls of some directors who wouldn't have just been articulate enough to evoke in the actor the required sort of sensibility and understanding, you know, of what they have to do. So, no, it's really enjoyable. But I think, as I say, it's also, I'm enjoying the independence that myself and Michael Hearn have. We're a partnership, really, because the first production that we produced was The Noble Call. And we just did we made a film of that then throughout the COVID time, whenever we could get a chance. So over a five-day shoot during the period of COVID, when there was a bit of a break in the COVID, we made a film of the Noble Call. Which,
I see that on your CV. Yeah. So is that is it possible to get a look at that? You're Desi in it.
Yeah, we did. It's going to come on again. We did a special viewing of it in the IFI about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And we had about 200 people who came in 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it went down the street. It was absolutely fabulous. It was a great reaction. I myself, I didn't really know if it would transfer onto the big screen, but it's superb. It worked brilliantly.
Love hearing stories like that.
But the IFI have a program there. They call it the Wild Strawberry, and it's designed for older audiences, and they put on particular types of show, of film that appeals to particular age groups. So they want us to do it again, following on the first viewing. They want us to do it again as part of the Wild Strawberry season. So that will be coming up at some point, probably early in the new year. Certainly won't be this year now. I think the program is still
Have to let us know about that. Vinny, you are such a fascinating person. You really are.
I'd listen to you talk all night. I really would.
Yeah,
you're brilliant.
Me too.
You're so informative. Now, we must grab a beer in sometime, anyway.
Now, back to the Classic and the Cloud Spotter. If people want tickets, what do they do?
Well, you can get them on the Eventbrite, or you ring the Five Lamp arts.ie.
Okay.
You can ring the Classic itself, but I think really probably Five Lamp Arts and Eventbrite are the two main ones.
And it's running Tuesday to Fridays at 11 a.m. at the moment.
11 a.m. Tuesday to Friday, yes. This week and then next week.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And you're in the Viking as well, but we're going to have to move on. I'm dying to ask you about the experience in the Viking.
The Viking is perfect for the intimacy aspect of the play, you know. It's very interesting to watch. Like, we've done it now. We toured it to Wales. We toured it down to a festival during the summer in Wexford. And we've done it in the Viking and the Sean O'Case. And now, the theatre, the stage in the Classic is quite a large stage, you know. It's a big kind of auditorium. And the actors have had to adjust their style of performing to cope, you know, to deal with the scale of the stage and with the scale of the auditorium. In the Viking, it's very intimate. You know, it's a Bijou theatre. It just holds a pocket, you know, about 65 people, I think. But it's fabulous. Great.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? Great atmosphere.
Just spontaneous, rousing, standing ovations at the end of every performance.
Brilliant,
out there.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Vinny, we have to let you go. I'm so sorry.
Okay,
don't want to let you go.
A pleasure to speak to you. The legend that is Vinny McKay. Thank you so much for being on the Art Show tonight on Near
FM.
We will get to see you soon.
Thanks, Robbie.
Good luck
with
the rest of the shows.
Rebecca, thank you so much for inviting me on. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I'm going to come and see it. Thank
Great
you.
Great stuff. I look forward to seeing you then.
Right. Slán
luck, Vinny. Best of luck, buddy. God bless.
Slán.
Bye-bye.
Slán.